So the title of my talk is Methodological Individualism and Contemporary Analytic Philosophy. In the handbook, co-edited by Natalie and Francesco, I am aiming at a very restricted set of very recent texts to which I reproach. I don't understand the word. In the handbook, co-edited by Natalie and Francesco, I am aiming at a very restricted set of very recent texts to which I reproach a certain use of analytical style, an unhistorical use, the origin of which I trace in philosophy to a series of articles written in the 1950s by John Watkins, a disciple of Karl Popper. I contend that the alleged clarification introduced by Watkins have unfortunately steered a full part of the current MI debate in the philosophy of the social sciences in the wrong direction, due to the notorious indifference of Watkins and his successors, with rare exceptions, to actual debates in the social sciences, resulting in a succession of misunderstandings that lead to a lot of mixed problems to the detriment of the advancement of the social sciences. Nevertheless, the analytical requirements of these authors lead MI proponents to clarify their own position, as I tend to show in my contribution. In the handbook, I discuss in the details, in particular, a paper published in 2019 by Judith Zale and Harold Kinkai and entitled Why Be a Methodological Individualist and Relative Papers. I will not today enter into the details of this discussion, which should be too lengthy and a little boring for the time available. Just to take an example, in this contribution, I examine the definition of holism given by Julie Zale in the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. Methodological holists defend the view that explanations that invoke social phenomena, for example, institutions, social structures or cultures, should be offered within the social sciences. Their use is indispensable. Explanations of this sort are variously referred to as holist, collectivist, social level, or macro level explanation. While methodological individualism is the thesis that good social scientific explanation should refer solely to facts about individuals and their interactions, a definition borrowed from List and Spiekermann, given in 2013. So, for these authors, introducing institutions in the explanance of social phenomena is already assuming a holist stance. In my talk today, I shall rather try to situate my contribution, which deals in the handbook with very particular current controversies in philosophy, within the broader intellectual space. My presentation today will therefore be less a summary of my contribution to the volume than an introduction to it. There will be two sections in my talk. One focused on what analytical philosophy is, the second, more briefly, on what methodological individualism is, with cross-references to the other domain in both sections. First section, focus on analytical philosophy. To simplify things considerably, one can say that the expression analytical philosophy can characterize both a style and a tradition which paradigmatically uses the style. this tradition, like any tradition, has its founding fathers, to whom philosophers who subscribe to this movement refer on a very regular basis. Without going into all the many technical details of what is really meant by analysis in analytical philosophy, one can say very simply that the analytical style is characterized by a threefold idea of linguistic clarity, conceptual clarity, and logical clarity. Fulfilling this idea involves characterizing a given theoretical position, for example, methodological individualism or holism, by a thesis and possibly sub-thesis that are carefully distinguished from each other, as Kincaid and Zali did in the papers, with careful attention to the terms used and the content of the concept to which these terms refer. Then, listing the arguments that support the thesis in question and assessing their logical validity, and, if necessary, seeking to refute carefully the arguments that contest or could contest this thesis, and the arguments that support opposing thesis. However, adopting this style in no way implies a commitment to the analytical movement as such. It is this kind of analytic turn that Watkins especially gave to the MI debate from 1952 onwards, whereas his mentor, Karl Popper, did not write in this style at all. There are several sentences in The Poverty of Historicism, in particular, that are notoriously obscure and ambiguous, for example, on the nature of institutions. Watkins did not situate himself any more than Popper in the analytic tradition, the content of which I shall now specify. But Popper sometimes happened to comment on the analytic tradition, while certain authors of this tradition reciprocally referred explicitly or implicitly to Popper's own works, and sometimes also, although very rarely, to the works of Karl Menger and Max Weber, the founders of a tradition in the social sciences typically claiming to use an individualistic methodology. The analytic tradition. The analytic tradition is generally considered to be rooted in the British philosophers Bertrand Russell, who was trained in mathematics, and George Moore, who was trained in the humanities, even though Russell recognized a precursor in the German philosopher and mathematician Frege. Wittgenstein, who was trained in Austria, and a little later joined Russell and Moore at Cambridge, is also often credited with having initiated a specific trend in analytical philosophy. Incidentally, Wittgenstein's style is quite distinctive and cannot be characterized as analytic in the sense I have defined. For Wittgenstein, philosophical analysis essentially consists in revealing that a large number of philosophical problems entirely stem from a misuse of language. Philosophical analysis is therefore primarily a question of dissolving philosophical pseudo-problems through an analysis of philosophical language, and not especially an issue of identifying theses and arguments. I shall consider this tripartition to be illuminating in identifying three sub-traditions in analytical philosophy that have been concerned with methodological individualism. The first of these sub-traditions is typically represented by the Vienna Circle, whose manifesto dating from 1929 and signed in particular by Rudolf Carnap and Otto Neurath, very favorably and explicitly mention Karl Menger, among many other authors, supposed to share the same scientific view of the world. As for Carlenberg, a physicist like Carnap and a member of the Berlin Circle, he implicitly clearly referred positively to Popper in Philosophy of Natural Science, published in 1966, when speaking of methodological individualism. Just as Russell, following Frege's footsteps, set up to reduce mathematics to logic, the philosophers of physics from Berlin, such as Ampel, or from Vienna, such as Carnap and Neurath, would have liked to reduce all the sciences, including psychology and the social sciences, to physics, with the aim of unifying all the sciences, while providing them with a sound foundation. Nagel developed this idea at length in 1960, with particular reference to the social sciences. Within this framework, MI is seen as a first step in this reductionist program, which is not at all presented in a negative light, quite the contrary, despite the pejorative character the term has since taken on. One of the issues considered the easiest in this perspective and identified as early as the Vienna Circle Manifesto is to first reduce expressions such as the spirit of a paper, Volksgeist, explicitly mentioned, to the spirit of particular individuals. However, although this philosophy did not address that further issue, one has to recognize that there may be specific properties at the strictly social level. That is, that the properties of collective entities better circumscribed than that of a people, such as the properties of a state, or of an army, or of a company, or of a church, are probably not all the same as those of the individuals who are members of this totality. This is the problem of emergence, which has since then given rise to a huge literature, later renewed by the philosophy of mind in the introduction of more refined concepts, such as that of supervenience. In fact, another more difficult problem is precisely that of how to reduce the subjective dimension of social phenomena, and in particular, the mention of intention in a statement, an issue that is central in Menger's and Weber's work. Both Nagel and Ampel were thinking of behaviorism as a type of psychology which could carry out this reduction, as Nathalie Bull clearly showed in a recent article. However, this issue is now being addressed in a different way, with the return of a certain kind of mentalism after the cognitive revolution in psychology. These questions are obviously very sensitive, not only for psychologists, but also for social scientists, and have recently given rise to a vast literature, which Francesco Diorio addressed in one of his own recent articles on reductionism. But in this recent literature, the idea of reductionism has become very pejorative, and sociologists who claim to be the supporters of MI aim above all to show that MI is not a kind of reductionism. The second of the analytic sub-traditions in philosophy. appeared a little later than the first one with Peter Winch, whose the idea of a social science dates from 1958. Winch's work does not use the analytical style as I have defined it, but is explicitly Wittgensteinian in inspiration. In particular, Wittgenstein developed the idea that there is no knowledge, even intimate knowledge, of what goes on in people's minds, including one's own mind, apart from properly neurophysiological processes, that is not discussing, that is, that does not in some way uses language. And since language is a means of social communication, the mind is necessarily also social. Anything that might escape this is by definition ineffable and therefore impossible to truly apprehend. Winch claimed more generally that Popper and I fail to recognize the fact that an individual is intrinsically social, and that an individual's properties, for example, being a soldier, cannot be identified independently of a given group, in this case, an army. There is no soldier if there is no army. In a way, the Winchian point of view is symmetrical with the Vienna Circle point of view. For the question that Winch raises is no longer that of the possible reduction of the social to the individual, but rather that of the reduction of the individual itself to the social, in this case, to a social institution, the other. All individual properties are social properties and not the reverse, as Popper is supposed to have contended. Even if Winch did not say so explicitly, this would justify a radically methodological holism, but in the precise sense of a reduction of the properties of individuals to the properties of collective entities. In France, Vincent Descombes is a strong supporter of this style of approach, often shared by Durkheimian sociologists. And Descombes backed it up with strong references to Marcellus. However, to return to Winch's example, one can think of combatants who are not yet members of any army, and therefore describe the individual properties of these combatants without making reference to the properties of an army established as an institution. Finally, there is a third, much more recent sub-tradition, which dates only from the 1980s and is more in line with the distant legacy of George Moore, in the sense that it pays special attention not to what the social sciences or philosophy say about the social, but to what common sense says about it in its everyday language. As a result, unlike the two previous traditions, this sub-tradition is interested not in the language of the social scientists or philosophers, but in the language of ordinary people, and especially in the various uses of we and us, as opposed to I and me or you, and in what these uses may express in terms of collective intentionality. This might concern the lives of a loving couple or of a soccer team, but it could also concern the members of a military commando group or the employees of a company. Aimo Tuomela, Margaret Dilbert, Michael Bratman, just to name a few, are representatives of this sub-tradition. With a certain impact in economics, for example, in Robert Sanders' work, This is an origin, and we find a way of rethinking notions such as team spirit, family spirit, or group spirit, on methodologically individualistic basis, and therefore without assuming the independent existence of collective entities overriding individuals, or the dependence of individual properties on groups' properties. The analytical style is very much in evidence here, as the authors seek to break down what is meant by statements such as, I commit to support this viewpoint, as distinct from, for example, I commit only if you commit. Also distinct from, we commit with each other together, or from, it is common knowledge that I commit and that you commit, and so on. Second, shorter section of my talk. Let me now turn more specifically to the MI as presented by those who claim it. It is common blind to say that there are many versions of MI or holism. It is therefore useful to try to identify the origins of these major disagreements and to attempt to circumscribe them without, however, wishing to legislate on the correct use. Schumpeter's publication of 1908 and 1909 are useful reference for this purpose. They certainly mark a break with previous uses, and all the more so in that Schumpeter distinguished political individualism at the foundation of John Locke's political liberalism from methodological individualism, a sensitive issue. However, while the passage of Schumpeter's 1908 book on methodological individualism, Das Wesen und der Habitat der theoretischen National Economy, in which Schumpeter carefully distinguishes between methodological individualism and political individualism, is often cited today, that the recent authors I am discussing, they generally forget the second part of chapter 6, where Schumpeter more positively characterizes what, in his view, methodological individualism is. What is the most striking in comparison to other currently widespread uses, including those I am discussing in the handbook, is that Schumpeter situates the very nature of MI not at all in the rejection of reference to collective entities, such as institutions, in the explanation of social phenomena, as for example Julie Zalet contended, but instead in a critical vigilance with regard to collective concepts. Schumpeter's examples are borrowed from economic theory, and it examines concepts such as national income or social value. Hayek, who focused attention again on Schumpeter's writings in the 50s, for his part, mentioned one of Weber's examples, the concept of capitalism, as a paradigmatic example of a problematic concept. Weber used quite ironically the concept of the spirit of capitalism in the title of his masterpiece, The Protestant Ethic in the Spirit of Capitalism. That which was particularly clear in the first edition of his book, since Weber quoted the spirit of capitalism in inverted commas, and the entire book can be read as a reduction of the allegedly autonomous overriding collective spirit to the spirit of an ideal typical individual, Benjamin Franklin. What Schumpeter and Hayek, and before them Weber, and after them Raymond Boudon, are criticizing is conceptual reality. What Hayek, quoting Reiter, also called the fallacy of misplaced concreteness. Weber wrote in an often quoted 1920 letter that he had become a sociologist because he was tired of exercises based on collective concepts. The principle of methodological individualism, as characterized by Schumpeter, is therefore not to reject all collective entities in the explanants, but only pseudo-collective entities, that is, those that cannot be clearly shown to be the outcome of interactions between individuals. We can do this, for example, with a company, or a bank, or a church, but not with an entity as vague as capitalism, or similarly, Protestantism. We can do this with a state, with its institutional rules spelling out all the decision-making procedures, but not with a people or a nation whose contours are too indeterminate for us to be able to trace the chain of successive decision-making procedures. So, what has now become commonplace in recent debates on MHI, that is that methodological individualism is the thesis that good social scientific explanation should refer solely to facts about individuals and their interactions, without mentioning institutions, which I quoted at the beginning of this talk, is unfortunately a quite valid view of this issue. By way of conclusion, I would like to add one point in anticipation of an obvious objection. Am I understood in this way, while particularly highlighted by the Menger-Weber tradition, is not the exclusive prerogative of this tradition. Your lecture, for example, one of the most vigorous recent defenders of this principle, he criticized, for example, as did Bounon, that the hypostasis of social structures does not at all claim to belong to the tradition of Austrian economics, or to the Weber, but to Marx. And Marx, indeed, also rejected false abstractions, such as the humanity, in his criticism of both Hegel and Proudhon. Léon Vamart, quite strikingly, much more often mentioned by economists today than Menger and or Hayek, as a typical representative of MI, wrote nothing explicitly on the subject, as far as I know. But his successor at Lausanne, Vilfredo Pareto, explicitly criticized in Mind and Society what he called the illegitimate personification of certain concepts. And it seems clear, in fact, that Vallard's economic theory conforms to the same principle. So, what makes the Menger-Weber tradition specific in its use of MI? It is that it adds to this first principle a second principle, methodological subjectivism, that is, the explicit consideration of the beliefs and intentions of the actors, what Weber called comprehensive sociology, and what Hayek came very close to calling comprehensive economics in chapter 3 of Scientism and the Study of Society, when he discussed the subjective character of data in the social sense. Thank you very much for your attention and patience.